Hey, welcome back to the Out of Spec Podcast. I am Jordan Schieffer, your host, joined by Ben Spreen and Austin Schieffer and Kyle Connor, and shortly, Forrest Jones. And we're just going to talk about a bunch of cars, things we've been driving, things we've been purchasing, and things we've just been having fun with. So let's just break the ice right away. The big news today, at least in my feed, was Ben's acquisition of a Taycan. Because you have it now, right? Like, you picked it up?
It's right out. You can't see it, but it's right there. It's just below the window outside the garage.
Ben, can you share spec, everything from start to finish, why you ordered the spec you did, the spec you ordered, ordering process, tracking, delivery, and now first drive?
Okay, that's a lot. We'll start with spec. I went rear drive because one, money, and two, sideways, because that's the saving money and going sideways. That's all you needed to tell me. I was in there. Dolomite silver, I think they call these the Taycan S aero wheels, which is the same as the base aero wheels. They just have some black paint in between the spokes.
Can you share how much you paid for a black pinstripe on your wheel?
$1,280, I think. I think it was that. I have to look at the build sheet. It was like $1,200
$1,300. Yeah, just for the same wheel and same tire, just for the little bit of black and sort of polished chrome aluminum looking look.
Yeah, they painted it slightly black for me for that nice fee there. And I can say totally worth it, because the regular wheels, the way those look unpainted, is pretty bad. So it was more a case of how much do I not want to look at the unpainted version than how much do I like the painted version.
There's a lot of that going on with Taycan, where like you have to pay money to get not necessarily the good stuff, but just to not have total garbage.
Bad stuff. That might be how they get you. It's very possible that they make the bass sound system as bad as it is so that you want to get the Bose, even if I'm not a big fan of Bose as a sound audio manufacturer. Although it does sound really good in this car, admittedly, so I'm pretty happy with that. But we did sunroof, well, glass roof, panoramic roof, 18-way sport seats plus, heated steering wheel, and a black Taycan script on the trunk. That's about it.
So what
I might be forgetting something.
What if you, well, you also got silver on tan interior, no cost option.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, silver's $800, right?
$860 or $850, something like that.
But the car comes standard with a lot. It comes standard with the full UI system, comes standard with LED headlights, comes standard with, you know, the awesome
wireless phone charger.
Yeah, it's got
that I'll never use, but it's there.
But it's a battery pack that we've never tested, and we're about to in about 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, so I went with the, 79.2 kilowatt hour pack. So this is what Porsche calls the performance battery and not the performance battery.
Or plus. Gross?
I think that's probably gross. I don't know what it is usable, honestly. Maybe probably 70. I don't know. It's I don't know how they advertise it. They advertise the other one as 93s, and I think that's gross rather than usable. So it's probably a little less.
83 or 82 usable.
And let's see. Order process was easy. The store I got it through had one open allocation for a rear-wheel drive, so I didn't have to wait to get an order slot. I just plopped in there like 4 days before it was unchangeable, and that's about as good as the timing as you can get. And 60 days later, the car is here. But tracking it was probably more fun than ordering it, because you get this like website with a map and a little blinking red dot, and it shows you where it is on the map. You can see each stage of production or transportation. And at each stage, there's some stuff you can read in there and videos in there that explain what's going, you know, going on in the process. So it certainly is a little bit less leaving you out in the open and wondering, you know, like I remember when we ordered our Teslas, it's just sort of like, yep, you paid for it. It's on the way. Who knows when? So it's nice to actually have like data to show and see that things were progressing, especially in today's chip shortages and whatnot.
And once it was produced, I've heard that some people get photos of their car on the line. Is that true? Or is that only for paint to sample cars, or what is that
about? I think it might be only true for the 911 right now. I certainly didn't get any photos unless I missed them. It's very possible I missed them. It would have probably looked the way it does now. I don't know what I would have gained from that, but it would have been kind of cool to see it. My understanding is that they take the photos manually instead of doing it like automated. And I think that's just due to privacy for workers there, because Germany is very strict on that sort of a thing. But yeah, they got it here from Germany and they built it surprisingly quick, 60 days or so.
Yeah,
so
it feels like no time at all. We were just talking about your spec. We had hour plus long conversations multiple times going through, well, you need this, you need that, don't get the sports teams, get the big wheels, like all of these different things.
Yeah.
Overall, I think you made the right decision in your final specification. It's like everything you need and kind of nothing you don't.
That was the idea. It's all the stuff that I thought, would I regret not having? And I put those on there. And then I kind of, you know, it's easy to forget how much standard equipment is on a lot of Porsche models until you actually like read through the list. Cause like I was thinking, you know, like a wireless phone charger or something that they usually charge for, but Taycan, it's free because it's the technologically savvy car or whatever. And the adaptive suspension is standard. So I have my different firmness choices and things like that.
But not dual charge ports. It's a steel sprung car, right?
Steel springs with dynamic dampers, which do a ridiculous job of going from comfort to stiff. It's like going over a speed bump. It feels like it rides better than my Model X on air suspension did, but that was maybe not the best comparison. So it rides really well. And then when you put it in sport, it's pretty tight. It's a lot better control of the body motion than the Model 3. It's kind of the opposite of the Model 3 suspension, because my Model 3 Performance has this amazing ability to be too soft and squishy when you're actually driving it quickly, and also too firm and uncomfortable on relatively smooth roads for some reason.
Yeah,
and I don't know how that happens. I'm not sure what engineering went into it, but it's nice to have the reverse of that finally, which is quiet and smooth on the highway that it is maybe rough. And then when you want to throw it around, it's really responsive. And this is a smaller battery, so it's like 500 pounds lighter than most other Taycans, and no front motor. So the weight's off the front axle, which is nice.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Forrest.
Hey, Forrest.
Hey, man. Congrats on your Taycan.
Oh, thank you.
So, Ben, let's just go through the car really quick, because up to this point, we've only tested big battery Taycans. And I've been lucky enough to do a review on the big battery rear-wheel drive pink car, the German spec that came to the U.S. for a quick tour. And interestingly, they have the same performance numbers as your car, but it weighs more. So I think it makes 50 more horsepower, or 50 more kilowatts. Yeah. I can't remember, but it's like directly proportional to the weight difference.
It is. It's like they wanted to make it simple and say, no matter which version you get, battery has nothing to do with performance. The performance trim has everything to do with performance. So it's kind of an interesting way of doing it.
Is it 800 volts? Do we know anything about the pack?
It's still 800 volts. Yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to do some charging curve testing. My guess is it will mimic big battery Taycan, just everything ramped down a little bit.
Yeah. I think instead of 265 peak, it's going to do like 230 kilowatt peak charge rate for a good bit, which is a lot. My Model 3 will do that for about half a second and then kind of just the rest of the way.
That's if you're at a version 3 supercharger, which there are none near you.
There's like two now. But really? They're not the ones I would normally stop at on the majority of my road trips, unfortunately. I did like go out of my way after the drifting day to stop at one. It was not optimal. I just wanted to do it because we don't get to use them all that often in our area because of where they position them. All the really important corridors seem to still have version twos, which is unfortunate. Like Rocky Mount, that freaking station has been version two, enough stations for a long time.
It's only 120 kilowatt version two as well.
Yeah, it's technically version one.
Yeah, it's not even a 150.
Yeah, yeah, what holiday was it? We were there going to the track and there was like a ridiculous amount of cars waiting to.
Well, I used to live, you know, right down the street from that charger, and that was just the worst possible place to be. The town and the charger, it's all bad. Glad we're out of there. Overall, yeah, big congrats on your car. Should we share some of our plans, or should we just keep those quiet until they're done? I think
maybe those quiet. We'll share a little bit.
Share a little bit.
We're going to drive the piss out of it. I mean, goal number one, drive it like a lunatic. It's rear-wheel drive, so there will definitely be rear-wheel drive things happening. There's no denying that. I would like to try and drive it in the snow. Maybe we get some Nokians on it and just drive it up a mountain in the snow. Just see how good it is as a rear-wheel drive car. I mean, It's electric. Yeah. It should do all right.
Absolutely.
Range testing, I'm very curious about, because
yes,
I have not seen a whole, I think Bjorn is the only person who's range tested the small battery, but he did it on a 4S, and this is just a rear drive car. So maybe it'll be the same. Maybe it'll be a little worse. Maybe it'll be a little better. We kind of don't know if the rear drive versus the four-wheel drive car is more or less efficient at this point, it seems.
It's hard to say because we've tested so many different software, and with WMA6, which is the new Taycan software, it no longer disconnects the motor in the back. So you're always connected all the time, even in efficiency mode. So that's where rear drive should be more efficient, I would think. But we'll see. We'll test your car. I'm looking forward to it. And range test, charging test. Hey, did you happen to go into the battery menu and see if there was the limited peak charging option?
No, I have not done that. I'm waiting to get my Porsche account activated so I can log in. And because if you change all those settings, they don't save until you have your Porsche ID in the car. It's sort of like your Apple ID on your smartphone with how everything syncs over. And so I just like got in the car. I drove it home. Then I just drove around like a lunatic for a couple seconds on some, you know, empty roads just to fiddle with it, and took a photo, and I'm here. So
what was your,
I haven't actually like gone through the system again.
What was your quick driving impression? Because you've driven, obviously, I think every version of Taycan other than this, or close to.
Yeah, I haven't driven GTS. That's the only, but that's just right. You know, brand new. So
yeah,
it actually, the weight difference between this and a 4S, the larger battery, is the 500 pounds you do notice. The front end does seem a little bit more eager to turn without that front motor. But I actually thought that might change how the ride was, but it still rides really well. It's got 19, so it's got a fair bit of sidewall compared to, you know, I think a lot of other cars. And it takes bumps really well. There are a lot of, like, my drive home was a great test because there's a rough section of highway I always do in the Model 3 where the car hits a bump. It's such a significant bump that it will cut power because the wheels will spin up as you go over because you're kind of going uphill. It's practically a speed bump on the highway from the construction they've been doing. And in the Taycan, it just sort of like, you know, you felt like a vibration, but not any shock, you know, transmitted through the car, which is, it's nice to have something that's really solidly built all of a sudden. I feel like I haven't experienced that for a long time with the last like four Teslas we've had.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I am so excited to come out there in the next couple of weeks and do our thing with that and your Model 3. Mm-hmm. And can't wait to share that with our audience. Stuff that's never been done before, except one time on Chris Harris on Cars.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We've been talking about this upcoming thing for a while. I specifically have kept the Tesla for this purpose. It's that important to us all. But I will say one thing I did not notice going into this. Well, I guess I should have expected it. But buying a non-Tesla EV is highly controversial, according to Twitter, as it turns out. Because if it's not the fastest 0 to 60 possible for the dollar, or the most range per dollar, or whatever it may be, I wonder, I must be a complete moron or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something.
Well, that's true. Everyone is completely correct. They got you right.
Yeah. I mean, I said in my post, I think, that I'm really happy to finally have some supportive sport seats that are really adjustable, have that like thigh support, and you know, side bolsters I can fiddle with and get dialed in just right. And someone was saying, well, you know, that's definitely, you're wrong because, what was it? You know, Tesla makes the most comfortable seats in the industry, according to, no data there, but
I mean, they're comfortable.
That's not what I was talking about, though. I never had a problem with the comfort there. We'll have to maybe do a breakdown of why I made the choice, because I think maybe some people are dumbfounded because they haven't really...
We'll do a whole video.
Explore those things. Yeah, we'll do a whole video on it, maybe.
There's plenty of opportunities to that, to open up the door to conversation. And huge congratulations to you and your Taycan. Really makes me want to get mine even much more. But I have to wait for a special option that's not available to be ordered yet. And I know I keep teasing this thing, but I'm getting a Taycan eventually once I can order the one I want. And but Forrest, you've been driving with Jordan some crazy stuff recently. I saw a Raptor. I saw a TRX. I saw Rolls. What's going on in your world? Seems crazy. I saw a Bugatti Shaver. The fastest shaver in the world.
Dude, the shaver is extremely hot on anything other than like the lowest setting. Like it,
explain,
I put it on my
it.
Face and
it
actually like singed my face.
Wait, it's what, heated?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, it's heated. It's a heated razor. It's supposed to give
you. Is it a razor or is it a sheet like an electric foil shaver?
No, it's like a normal Gillette razor that has the same paint sample as a Bugatti, the Agile Blue. And right. I don't know how much that costs. But then on top of that, there's like two like heat settings.
Is this a French thing we don't know about? Do French people?
Do you have it? I want to see this thing, and then I want to know how much it costs, because apparently I've bought something incredibly overpriced if you ask Twitter, but I can't wait to see what this thing looks like by comparison.
I love this.
Imagine if you got a heated shaver. Talk about overpriced. This thing's got to be 10 grand.
He just dropped it. I don't know if you can hear that through the mic.
Uh-oh.
He just straight up dropped a Bugatti.
They're gonna bill you like $47,000.
Yeah, but
is this a review unit? What is this?
It's a so it's not a review unit. It's a giveaway, right?
Yeah. Here, I'll explain.
He just got the whole kit.
So you have to shave first and then give it away with your hair in there to up the price, right?
Yes. Okay. So for those listening, I will explain this in detail. So Gillette teamed up with Bugatti to create this this razor. Here, can you guys see it? So here's the razor.
The least impressive thing I've ever seen. For
it says
it's really expensive.
Gillette Labs, nice, and I guess like there's a light in the middle, and the light is supposed to mimic the tail light, right?
Yeah, the taillight bar of the Bugatti Chiron.
Yeah. It's so the carbon orange foil. Is the acceptable heat level. If you hold it, it goes to exhaust on your face hot. Like it is just super hot. It actually like made like the hissing noise when I put it up to my cheek, like burned my face.
What section of the blade area does it heat? Does it heat the actual like razor blades or?
See that like orange part at the bottom?
Oh, okay. It heats that.
That gold part, that's what heats up.
That metal, I guess.
Wow.
And it gets hot. Wow. And then there's a Bugatti wireless like charging dock in the same color, and it just kind of
clips. Oh, that's like, that does look kind of cool.
I'm putting that next to my shoe.
It dropped. It's magnetic. But it gets better.
Oh, it gets better.
It gets way better. So it comes.
How could it?
You can get a collector's edition, which they're all sold out of. I have the last three that I'm going to do a giveaway on. Look at this case. It's all metal. Like, here's my ring. It's all metal briefcase with a matching strap, because I guess you just want to carry this around with you.
Is that a Chiron seatbelt?
It's a seatbelt material.
I hope it's a seatbelt.
Yeah. That's incredible. Dude,
oh my God.
It's anyway, like a million so you open this, and then inside, there's a model like Chiron.
Oh my God. That's what going with me and carry on.
What does
that also heat up?
Oh, and there's a journal with the Bugatti pen.
Do you just do a daily journal of how your shaves go with the Bugatti shaver?
Like, what would you write in there? Like, today I got razor burn.
Yeah.
Both types of razor burn. Yeah. Just now, two ways to do it.
I woke up in a new Bugatti.
Today I woke up with a Bugatti.
This just says
that's absolutely insane.
Isn't that crazy? Like, and it's
this
about
is the most comical brand co-branding I've ever seen of any product. I know there's a lot of weird ones out there, but this takes the cake.
Yeah, dude.
1 of 5,000. That's all it says.
Would you pay $120 for it?
Those little toy models are like $95 if you want one Porsche or whatever.
How much is the whole kit?
The razor is $120.
The
whole kit is like,
but they sell it like $99 for the heated one, right?
Yeah.
The whole kit
is actually not the worst. I can't believe this. It's not the worst value.
I've spent more on less.
No, but the thing is, you can't even buy the kit anymore. The kit's just sold out. They just don't have anymore.
Yeah. So, I kind of like the case it came in, actually. I want that more than anything.
How's your giveaway going to work? How can someone win one, or are they already spoken for, or how does that work?
No, it's just going to be, full random Instagram giveaway. Just like a, hey, thanks for all the support. It's a cool way to give back, I guess. Nice little Christmas gift for someone, but it's basically going to be, I'm going to announce it on TikTok, have people go to my Instagram, like do the whole follow me, follow Gillette, and then basically comment, because the giveaway will be two. So I'll have them comment someone else that they would want to win it. And then there's like a website where you can go to and it just randomly will pick one of the comments from like that post. And then I'll just announce it whenever. But those two people, cool. The person that commented and the person that tagged will win.
So you said you have three, so you still get to keep one.
Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
So I don't think you could give away
the one you used.
Yeah,
I think
you the one I've dropped. Like
I think you should give away the one you've used. Like Kyle said, I think that's worth way more.
What?
The one you've used?
Yeah, it's got
giving this away.
Forest burnt skin on.
It still has my hair follicles in it.
So enough razors, but you've also had trucks and luxury cars. So how so many cars in such a short period of time? Yeah. You're crazy. What's going on?
So I had the Raptor, which is actually my second time having the Raptor, because the first time I had it, unfortunately, I won't get too much into this, but unfortunately, my aunt got really sick. She ended up passing away, and I went out to go see her right before she passed away. So the day I was going to go film the Raptor, I had to fly out. So I asked the guys at Ford, hey, can I have it again like in like two weeks or so? So that's what this loan was. And then right before it was about to go back, I was like, man, I would love to do a comparison with this in the TRX. And I reached out to Scott Brown. And last minute, I was just like, hey, do you have a TRX I can have for like 2 days? And I guess they're not really fond of comparisons. They're like not, it depends on how you're going to do the comparison, common. I guess. I don't know if you've experienced this before, but they seem very like, I don't know.
Yeah, when we pitch comparisons, we have to give them a full outline of the vehicle testing, but we can't obviously share. Like at the end of the day, I'm not going to go and share, we think you're going to win. We don't give the results until the video goes live. But yeah, our comparisons, and at this point for like our electric car stuff, everyone kind of gets the deal. We do testing no one else does. We get the cars. But like 2 years ago when we were trying to get cars for this stuff, comparisons have always been very edgy with automakers.
Oh, yeah. I think it's weird because like they know that they're not paying us because we can technically say what we want. And I think that makes them hesitant because they're like, oh, what if he says ours is terrible or whatever?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey,
the media people are worried about their jobs a little bit. They have to be, you know?
Yeah. And so with my video, I mean, it's only, I think it ended up being like a minute and 20 seconds. All I did was I presented the facts on both. I was like, here's the specs on this. Here's the specs on that. Which one would you take? And I just kind of let the audience decide because I was like, at the end of the day, the Raptor's specs for off-road are technically better, even though it's by like 1 inch in every area, which I don't know if that makes a massive difference. The biggest difference is engine. But then again, even though the EcoBoost is way less powerful, it's been running in Baja 1000s stock. It gets like 530 miles on a tank, whereas the TRX gets like 300 miles on a tank.
10 miles.
getting 8.9 miles per gallon, all premium gas.
Yep. Yeah, out here in California, you have to have a third job just to run your TRX.
Dude. Yeah, you got to refinance your mortgage every time you take one on loan. I mean, look, we had a TRX. I think we averaged 5 and a bit through our week of like 600 miles on it. But we were romping on it and jumping it and doing stupid shit with it the whole time. But it was,
But would you not do that all the time in one? Like, how are you going to resist the urge? You
know, I know. It is ridiculously fast, though. Like, it's because I did like a launch in the dirt and it launches okay. It just, I hate that you have to use the brakes, whereas the Ford, it kind of just like, it'll like brake torque it and like drop the clutch basically. So it launches way harder. Even though it's only
I think V6. The EcoBoost and the Raptor, because I've driven the Raptor and the TRX don't feel that different in terms of power. What do you think?
No, you don't really notice the power difference unless you're like on the highway. Like I was going 70 on the highway and I was like, I'm just gonna floor this TRX. And I did, and dude, it just hustles. It's so fast.
Yeah, and the 70 truck, to 104, whatever the limiter is, gets real quick.
Dude. Well, the craziest part is in the Raptor, when you throw it into Baja mode, like not because there's a button on the steering wheel where you can switch the exhaust to Baja mode. I'm talking about switching the entire drive mode to Baja, and it like lets out these crazy noises. And me and Jordan were driving, and I downshifted under this highway, and dude, it let out the loudest pop I've ever heard.
It was impressive.
It was like rah-bah! And then we just accelerated, and it just like, it was weird, man. It's like a tuner car in a truck.
It's, yeah, it's like a trombone style exhaust. It sounds like a really crappy 350Z sometimes, but then sometimes it sounds really good. Yeah. Like it's kind of confusing. Yeah.
Force like, so comment. True. It sounds like a 370Z or like a bad GTR almost.
Yeah. But out when we were out in the on that trail, it sounded really good. Like when we were just getting on it. Like I thought it sounded better than TRX. Like just because it had this like raucous noise going on.
I feel like the Raptor motor is racier. Like it just feels a little more motorsport like than the supercharged motor that Hellcat.
TRX is lazy. That thing sounds like it's gonna fall apart at idle.
It's a torque kind of a thing.
Yeah, they make all these like little ticky noises on start over and it goes blah, 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 and it's like sounds mechanical and like pre-broken. And it was crazy. It was the only car that didn't have enough brakes. Ours was probably just romped on by everyone. It had like 9,000 miles when we got it. And it was the only car under a launch control scenario could not hold itself stopped when we floored it.
Yeah. So imagine trying to do that on dirt. It was just spinning like crazy. And I was like, there's no way. Like, you can't do a good launch. Like, you're better off just flooring.
You're just matting it from a stop. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and back to that PowerPoint, 450 or close to 500 horsepower versus 702 seems like a lot. But I think Ram has won the challenge of the most amount of drivetrain loss of any vehicle in existence.
Maybe, dude. And it's like, 650 pounds heavier than the Raptor.
Yeah. It just doesn't. Like the Raptor feels like a race car compared to the TRX. Now, don't get me wrong. I love everything about that TRX. Jumping it, then the damper stiffened before landing it. Like it's really cool. And it's like America and makes noise. And I, you know, drive it at like a quarter throttle right when the supercharger starts going.
Oh, yeah.
So awesome. But at the end of the day, I'd take the Raptor personally.
That's hard. See, it's hard because I said TRX. But here's the only reason why. The only reason I said TRX, if I was actually going to like use it for what it's meant to be used for, like take it to the dunes often, which we have a lot of out here in Southern California. And, you know, like take it like on some, maybe some overlanding trips or something. I'm like, dude, I wouldn't pick anything other than the Raptor. But like realistically, if I were to get something like that, I'd go off-road every now and then. I'd drive it around. I'd listen to the crazy noises that it makes. And I will say from like a comfort standpoint, the TRX does feel like more premium, and like even though it has the way louder exhaust, it's like slightly quieter. It just feels a little bit more luxe, whereas the Ford feels more like properly built for what it's meant to do, if that makes sense. So like I think the TRX would easily be the cooler daily.
Yeah, it felt more premium. Even like I was in the backseat of both and I was like, I'd rather be in a TRX.
But for like actual,
I'm glad we do.
Yeah.
Love, I love the Raptor. I think the Raptor is like the jam because it's so soft and squishy and like you can, you know, full on send it everywhere. And like, it's, I think it's a little bit more nimble than the TRX. And to me, I like it. Yeah. I don't like that EcoBoost engine too much. I can't wait till we get the V8 Raptor. That's going to be the end all smackdown.
I'd like the Power Boost hybrid in a Raptor, honestly. I really like driving that truck.
That Power Boost is magical. Really is a great thing. Except the transmission.
Also, if I'm daily in a truck, there's no way in heck I'm going to have either. I'm not going to have a TRX. I could not do that. I think I would feel guilty.
Dude, yeah, that gas would.
Hey, so, Kyle, here's... Sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I brought up this really like out there concept to Jordan. So you know how like the TRX is known for like, it's the truck with like the supercharger whine, the loud exhaust. And, you know, Ford touts their EcoBoost so hard. And I was telling Jordan, I was like, dude, what if they just made this like wild, like spooly version of like a Raptor? And that's what the Raptor R ended up being. Like it actually didn't have a V8. It was just this crazy, like turbo spool monster, the same way you get the
big twin turbos.
That'd be so wild.
Big blow up noises. That'd be perfect.
It's so crazy.
It'd be cool.
I mean, someone's making that right now. So
yeah,
go the 2J route.
Yeah, Yeah, that blue Maverick we saw at the LA Auto Show slammed on white wheels with a big blow-off valve. That would be just...
Still getting like 35 miles a gallon.
35 miles a gallon, big turbo.
Swap the duals for a single big turbo and put a massive blow-off valve on it and just have the boost kick you like a mule at like 6,000 RPM. I think that'd be insane.
That's America right there, baby.
I will say,
or
though,
Japan. It might be Japan.
I think for fast trucks, there's really only one answer, which is you get an F-250 diesel because those things can be really fast when you modify them. Kyle, you remember going, remember when I bought that really garbage Corvette? And Rask came along in his F-250. I was in my Model X 90D, which wasn't like the fastest, but it's still a quick car. Z60 is like 4 seconds, I think. And it got absolutely walked by our friend's F-250.
Yep.
Which looks completely bone stock.
Just a 6 liter too.
Was it just blowing smoke the whole time?
Actually, it was actually running pretty efficient. Yeah.
What? He tunes his stuff to like actually make good power and not be wasteful.
Smoke is wasted power.
Yeah, that's true.
Unburnt fuel, or well. I guess it burnt slightly, but not combusted.
Slightly crispy fuel. Wait, can we talk about something more important than trucks, which is the Rolls-Royce Ghost? Because I've been able to drive it too. I would like to get your opinions and hear your thoughts.
Sure. Have you driven the Black Badge?
Oh, I have not driven the Black Badge. That's a Black Badge.
Yeah, this is a Black Badge. So
that looks real good.
I read an article from Motor Trend while I was waiting, like eagerly awaiting this car, right? And I was reading through the article and I kind of agree with some of the stuff they said. Their biggest complaint with this car was it, for Rolls, it allows a little bit more imperfections than you would like expect from a Rolls. So it has a stiffer suspension because it's the Black Badge. I guess that's the thing. Jordan pointed this out, and I agree. I don't really like the red brake calipers. I think it's kind of...
I was just about to say, that feels like it shouldn't be legal on a Rolls Royce.
Yeah. The wheels are like these crazy carbon fiber wheels. Jordan knows more about it, but to be honest, I'm like, it won't even make it to the video I'm going to make because no one's going to care about that on a Rolls Royce.
You got my interest already. They're carbon wheels, like GT350R style?
They're the normal Rolls Royce buyer would not care, but it's like they made these specs for the auto manufacturers that cover them in the press to appeal to auto enthusiasts, which the general Rolls-Royce buyer probably is not an auto enthusiast.
I don't know. I feel like if you have a Rolls, you can have a lot of cars. I mean, at least I know like two Rolls owners, but it's like one of 40 cars for them.
That's true. But I feel like it's such a tough market, right? Because when I think of Rolls-Royce, right, I think of maybe that's their fifth or sixth car. Right. And they do have, let's say if they have something like a GT350R in their collection, you know, on that car, I can appreciate the carbon wheels. I can appreciate all this. But when you're talking about a, 5,600 pound SUV or not SUV, sedan that feels the weight of an SUV, I'm like, carbon wheels, it's just like, it's just
that
silly.
Unsprung weight, it can make a big difference. You know?
But not when you have stiffer suspension in a Rolls.
So the article I read equated it to the unsprung weight and these wheels are equated to like throwing a lawn chair off the deck of the Titanic because it'll make it slower.
Wait, but I don't actually think it's a carbon base wheel. I think it's an alloy base wheel with carbon inserts.
Oh, well, that makes more sense.
22 layers of carbon fiber, and then they have
Where's the metal coming from?
Aluminum metal rim is what they call it.
So the outer portion is aluminum.
Yeah.
But then everything on the inside is carbon.
That makes
it's not
no
a full
sense.
Carbon wheel.
No.
So is it like a metal spoke with a carbon fiber barrel?
It's weird. It looks like the metal is like, around the rim. And then the spokes are like metal finish, but all the insides are carbon.
It's an aluminum barrel or a metal composite barrel of some kind with the carbon acting as visual, I would say. Maybe some structural component as well. But the main core structure of the wheel is aluminum, I think. Otherwise, you really wouldn't need metal at all at that point.
No.
Yeah, so it was interesting because, Forrest, when we had the S-Class recently, it's weird to compare this to it because this is three times the cost of an S-Class, which is ridiculous. This is almost $500,000. And
$496,000.
$496,000, yeah. shaving in under 500 grand. But it's like, it's interesting the things that are different between them. But like Kyle said, it is a whole new level of experience. Mm-hmm. But there's still things, there's things I appreciated more in the S-Class, but I understand if I am just not caring about the infotainment, not caring about certain things, I just want to get in my car, be comfortable, be driven to my next meeting, and then get out of the car. Like, this is phenomenal. It's so quiet. It's the most comfortable ride ever.
Yeah, dude, but we're going like 80.
I don't want to be chauffeured in a Ghost. I want to be chauffeured in a Phantom. Ghost, I would feel embarrassed.
Yeah,
you drive a Ghost.
You're already spending $470. I just went on cars.com. You can buy a 2-year-old Phantom with like 6,000 miles for the same price.
It's crazy. So that's but what then you don't do. Get to commission it. And that's probably almost all the fun of Rolls Royce buying. Well, because
spend the money and do it properly. Phantoms are nothing around here. Also, totally agree. Black Badge is dumb. It does not fit with the Rolls Royce theme and heritage. It shouldn't be. I mean, Rolls Royce does have a racing heritage. Don't get me wrong. But in today's modern culture, should be luxury.
They have a rally heritage
compromise.
Too.
I think Black Badge should be a really, really nice, like, darked out package, and that's it. I think that's all it should be. I don't think they should have added the brake calipers. I don't think they should have added more power. I don't think they should have messed with the suspension. I think it should have just been a looks package alone, because people will pay for that at that price point.
Oh. And we didn't talk about this. So this color, we parked in the garage and an ID4 Pro drove up. Same exact color. This color on the Rolls Royce, $16,000. The ID4, it was standard. And it was identical. This doesn't even have like multi. I mean, it probably is thick paint. Like they said, they use like 100 pounds of white primer or whatever. But the color, actual color shade, there is no depth to this. It is literally just flat Nardo gray on a Rolls Royce, and they're like 16 grand.
Yeah. Well, they had to skin all those ID4s to get the paint to put on.
So, do you know who Mark Court is?
Negative.
So Mark Court is the sole person for the past 26 years that has painted
the pinstripes.
The pinstripe.
I do know of this guy.
And I know of the guy.
Apparently, it's like a one take thing. Like if he messes up,
you have
to repaint the whole car.
Yep.
Dude. And I've heard, I don't know for sure, but I've heard from multiple websites that he makes six figures just doing that.
Oh easily.
I'm sure he makes high six figures if he's doing it.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. Dude.
And now his grandson, I think it's his grandson, is now learning the trade from him. So it'll be within the family.
That's crazy, dude.
Wow.
What else did we learn about this? The Rolls-Royce White Glove program, where you can purchase your chauffeur person and then send them off to Rolls-Royce to learn how to drive a Rolls-Royce properly.
Mercedes has one, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to do that BMW armored 7 Series one. That's all the evasive driving terrorist avoidance one. I think it was BMW.
once there's a
7
Series electric security, we're all in.
Yeah, we'll go train up.
Yeah.
Okay, what was the biggest thing you hated about the Rolls Royce, Jordan?
It was a little gimmicky at times. Like the actual technology was, compared to the S-Class, so disappointing. I know that's not the point of the Rolls Royce.
Not the point.
But it's like, even the doors that like all you auto close it by holding your finger on the thing. It like,
get out of here, Mr. Tesla man. That's not the point.
Most of the time it didn't work, but it's like, if it's not the point, why?
Wait, it didn't work. What do you mean?
It didn't work.
So like, when you're inside and you like push the buttons, it closes every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That works every time. But when you're exiting the vehicle, it has such resistance to the door because it wants you to like put your finger on that little button on the outside of the door.
You have to push the little button.
Yeah. So that was working for us like 75% of the time.
Yeah.
I've never had it mess up. I wonder if it's vehicle specific.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, this one doesn't have buttons anymore. It has the capacitive touch on the door. And I think it was failing to read our fingers or hands sometimes.
Oh, yeah, because it doesn't actually push in.
Yeah.
Right.
It was weird.
I don't know. I had a new Ghost. I never had that issue. That's weird.
Maybe it's just ours, man. I'll have to check it out.
Like, slight disappointment in the attempted sportiness aside, Is the sporty version of a Ghost, the black badge, still, is it more comfortable than an S-Class? Is it still like of that level?
Yes.
So it's still, so we're talking about a supremely nice car still, right?
The really stiff, rough, upper echelon
of possibility for ride quality.
Sure. The really stiff, rough riding black badge is still more comfortable than the nicest S-Class.
Yeah. So we're only
is there any car out there that like you could say is, oh, that rides like the black badge still?
Yeah. So we were going 80 miles an hour on the highway today, and my little Apple Watch has like a decibel reader. It was at like 54, 55 decibels going 80.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It was
That's quiet.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, dude, I was like, I can like hear your thoughts at this point, like whispering to each other.
Thinking so loud over there.
We could whisper to each other at allegedly 90 miles an hour.
Yeah. And then we were trying to figure out like, is the bespoke audio in this vehicle actually good, or is it good because there's no ambient noise?
Yeah, S-Class does have a better sound system, but this is still a fantastic sound system. It's just,
Did you notice how there's just an L? There's no paddles or anything. It's P-R-N-D-L.
Yeah, Prindle.
Mm-hmm. Prindle. It's like the Zach and Cody. Is that the name of the show?
Yeah, I used to love that show, dude.
Me too. I just, the Prindle episode was my favorite. You have to go to D and put it, but this is the Prindle. It was the best.
Reverse neutral driving? No.
I just saw a reenactment of them talking about that, the same cast that originally did that, and they talked about that scene. It was great,
dude. That's like a trend on TikTok.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah, that sound, it's funny.
So you guys are driving Rolls-Royce Ghost. Guess what I'm driving this week?
What?
GMC Sportage.
Oh no, I got a couple cars. I got a GMC diesel inline six. 18.4, 1500. Great truck.
I love it.
The best engine. Great truck. Yes. I interviewed the engineer of the engine, the lead engineer. That'll be included in my review of talking about the nerdiness of making the smoothest diesel engine I've ever experienced. And then I just drove the new 2022 Jetta GLI, the facelift one. And Volkswagen said, great, we'll send you one. So they sent last year's one. And so it's not the facelift one.
Oh, wow.
And it's the 2021 GLI manual. Like, I've been having fun driving it, but the air conditioning is broken.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit toasty in there.
Oh. Dude, I have to agree with you. I think if you're going to get, it's a GMC, right?
Yeah.
Dude, if you're going to get a GMC, like, the diesel's the way to go, dude. It's so much torque, and it's getting like, what, 700 miles on a tank?
Dude, we tested, Gary took this on a MPG loop today. I don't know what he got, but I tested the Suburban High Country with the same engine, which probably would do a little bit better than this because this has less aero than the box with the open bed creating more drag. That did 33 MPG at 70 miles an hour.
That's crazy.
In the loop. So it's all legit. So we just ran this. I don't know what it is. I haven't spent
too much time. I've never owned a car that's gotten that high of gas mileage, actually.
I just can't say enough good things about this engine and transmission combo. Yeah. I start it up, it's just boom, right there. Cold engine operation. It drives like it's warm all the time, and it could be 31 degrees outside, and it's just amazing. It's got great torque. It sounds really good. Mm-hmm. And I'd love just driving it to Starbucks around town. The brake pedal's awesome. The steering's great. The size of the truck's great. I mean, look, I like pickup trucks. I'm a truck guy. But like at the end of the day, this engine makes the entire truck.
Oh, dude. And you have the AT4 trim, right?
Yeah, it's an AT4 carbon. So everything's blacked out on the white truck. Ooh. It looks great with the meaty tires. It's so good looking.
Can you get a Yukon
sound under there too?
So you can get, I believe, AT4 on Yukon, but I'd go Denali personally. And then what I really like is the Denali with this same engine you can get. I think that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Just not a pickup truck and SUV.
Yeah, you can get the Escalade diesel, by the way. You can get a Duramax full-size Escalade.
That sounds pretty appealing, actually.
And then you get super
cool. Why not be pretentious if you're going to spend $98,000 on a luxury SUV?
Yeah, well, the only
one everyone hates.
So once Suburban High Country and Denali, I think, and maybe Premier as well, next year should get Super Cruise, is my guess, because the chassis supports it. And once that happens, I think the GMC is the sweet spot. It's the working man's side. You get all the good Lugso stuff. You don't have to deal with the image of the Escalade, especially around here. It's a little pretentious. Maybe in Southern Cali, not so much. But here, it's, you know, it look a little out of place in a new Escalade. So new Denali, that's the way to go. And then you don't feel bad about getting it muddy. It's a work truck.
And I actually had the one you're talking about, the Denali Yukon with the Duramax. And dude, it's just super nice. It's like, it feels as luxurious as you would want. It's not like it's not like the Escalade truly justifies that price difference. And I think the Yukon looks better in Denali trim. I think it
totally
looks
agree.
Yeah. Elegant. It looks strong, boxy, and I don't know. I really think it looks more luxurious than the Escalade, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a different type of luxurious. You know, when you get the Escalade Sport blacked out, look, that thing looks hot going down the road on that's the 22s, all black. You got to get it all blacked out. Look, there, that's a look. It's a New York City look. I like it. I get it. But at the end of the day, it's not for me. The Denali is more my style, a little bit more down to earth. Ideally, probably the Suburban High Country is what I might end up going with. I'm not buying one, but I would go with, cause that's even more down to earth and we live in the high country and that truck and the color combo we had looked perfect. And I just kept playing Like a Rock the entire time. I think it's by Bob Seger cause that was their old Chevy commercial.
So when I had the high country, it was like a month after I had the Denali diesel and it was the high country with the 6.2 V8. It had like every option, like their suspension, all that. It was like 80, 81.
Yeah.
And the Denali Yukon diesel I had was like 83 or 84.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I would have just gotten the Yukon.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You just go for the GMC, I think. But just, I think, absolutely.
Yeah. And dude, like you said, that diesel's sweet, dude. I could not get enough of that engine.
Yeah, this engine is a masterpiece. The only problem is there's kind of a fatal flaw in terms of servicing. At 100,000 miles, you pretty much got to drop the whole bottom of the engine to replace a belt oil pump. It's not a chain. And that's the only bad thing you could say about it. So you got to budget $3,000 every 100,000 miles or something like that. But it's not invasive. If the belt goes, it's not like it's an interference situation. So it doesn't grenade the engine. It'll just, you know, shut down, no issue, tow it to the place, replace it, and get back on the road. The GM has a recommendation. It might be 150,000 miles, and they were going to issue guidance on extending it. But I talked a lot about this with the engineer, and it's actually a video I recorded when I had the Suburban High Country that I never included in the review, so I'll include that with this review.
Yeah. So here's a question, since we're on GM. With them going like full electric, obviously, I feel like their big SUV platform will live on the same one that the Hummer EV is going to be on.
Yes.
Like, I just don't really see how it can get to a point, at least not soon, where like all the Yukons, Denalis, and, you know, Escalades are living on full electric platforms. I mean, I'm sure it'll happen, but I just can't see many people buying them up that typically buy those vehicles. Cause people I see that typically buy those live in like the country. That's like a luxury country vehicle.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Look at the people who take them on, you know, there's buyers in different parts of the country. Everyone in Connecticut with a Suburban GMC Yukon takes it up 3 hours to Vermont. That's 200 miles every weekend. They got to come back. They have a cabin probably that doesn't have, you know, high power capacity. They got to get their kids to the ski mountain. Electric's just going to get in the way at this point. And then you have the guys out here where I live in Wyoming and Northern Colorado. I'm the next town down from Wyoming where we have to do, you know, speed limits, 80, 85. We got 10,000 pound horse trailers and we got to, oh, by the way, the next town, 500 miles to Salt Lake City. And there's no charging infrastructure. Like it's just not going to work for this type of stuff. No, so at the end of the day, Hummer EV is going to be bought by people in Miami that are CrossFitters and it'll be awesome. And they'll sell, they'll sell every single one that they can. And that's what it's going to be used for. And they'll crab walk around the city over Volkswagen Beetles and it'll be hilarious.
A1A.
Walks to freedom at every stoplight.
But in terms of a practical solution, you got to spend so much money for these electric platforms, $100,000 plus for a fully spec'd Hummer EV. for a 200-ish kilowatt-hour battery pack with huge inefficiencies. And by the way, it's like now it's going to take forever to charge because you got to charge this huge battery. Guess what? Diesel. 5 minutes, I'm back on the road. It's the future, baby.
Yeah,
I'm all in.
I kind of wonder if some of the, and maybe it's because I'm in the South, and so that could skew this to me, but honestly, some of the people who buy this big full-size like GM and like pickup truck shared platform body-on-frame SUVs almost take pride in the fact that it's the opposite of an electric car to a little bit of an extent. And, you know, it's not everyone, because like a large people, percentage of people who have them where I live, like, which is a pretty metropolitan area, do not need the capability or the range. They just like driving a big truck around. Yeah. And they could convert, but I, you know, we've certainly have a lot of people who want Rivians and things like that. But there's also, I think, a segment of those owners who, even if it would totally fit their lifestyle, just kind of wouldn't.
Yeah. And I'm okay with this because at the end of the day, if they make a Suburban electric, or if they make an F-150 electric, which they're going to, or if they make a Hummer EV, every single one that they could possibly be produce will be sold. And there is a use case for that vehicle. So at the end of the day, we still need combustion vehicles. We don't have unlimited resources to just go, everything's electric right now, from a charging side, from a material resource side, from an engineering side, from a production standpoint. So all of the ones that the companies can squeeze as hard as possible to build will be sold. There's no demand problem here for EVs. I truly believe that.
Yeah. I actually really want them to make the Volt, but GMT 900 platform. I really liked the Volt. I think that extended range EV, i3 range extender, sort of a logic,
that's the
would apply so well to one of these huge trucks. Give it like a 40 kilowatt hour battery. You get maybe 80 miles of range.
New Range Rover plug-in, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, just make everything the new Range Rover plug-in. Six-cylinder turbo engine when you want them to rip, and then a huge-ass battery, good DC charging. You could drive it like an electric car everywhere. And then for your trips, you just turn on the engine.
I don't want a plug-in. I want a pure electric drivetrain with a generator.
Well, that works. That's the i3.
Because I think for towing, that would be more ideal. Because you want peak power. You don't want like that weak sauce 136 horsepower PHEV motor moving you around.
I totally agree. It should be electric driven. But at the end of the day, for towing up here in the mountains, we're going to run into i3 situation, which is it will run out of power.
Well, my thought is if you have an engine that can tow and produce enough power to tow, it should be able to produce enough electricity to allow an electric motor.
So you're saying put in the inline six Duramax diesel, for example. Keep that drivetrain, then add it would have to be 50 kilowatt hour battery pack, two electric motors. All the engine's responsible for is generating the
electricity. Just generating. Maybe it could be a four cylinder, a V6. Doesn't really need to be that special motor. It doesn't have to generate it, you know. I mean, it's got to make a lot of power, but it's not like torque matters anymore.
Yeah, that's a great solution. That's what I want in my Sprinter, honestly.
That'd be perfect.
So what I'm hearing is like diesel hybrid. Wasn't Porsche running that in like Le Mans or something?
Well, it's like any train ever.
Yeah, just build me a train. Thank you.
That's how you convert the Southerners, is you just do a diesel electric truck that can tow really well. And they're like, maybe this electric thing isn't that bad.
Blows out simulated black smoke.
Yeah.
This thing's built like a freight train. That's a sales point right there to a truck buyer. I'm in already.
Yeah, I think that's the future, because then all of your driving around town, you just plug it in whenever you can, Volt style, i3 style, but then there's zero worry, and then you're maximizing the electric driving. Great idea.
Dude.
So a few days ago, we drove something on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. That if I lived and worked downtown Denver, I would just commute in this thing. This is in Forrest's living room right now. Well, who makes this? Segway?
Oh, the go-kart thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a company called Segway. They made the like original Segway, but now they make like scooters and mopeds and go-karts apparently.
So just drifting this electric go-kart, it doesn't drift that well.
Do you have a good contact there, by the way?
You drift it?
Yeah, dude. If you want a contact, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, we're starting a new channel focused on micro-mobility. So,
That's genius, because that stuff's getting getting pretty big.
It's called Out of Spec Scoots. It launches in January.
I like it.
This is prime, because you can take the rear axle off, basically, and then attach the stick, and then you have suddenly a Segway. And so it's dual purpose. It's brilliant.
Really? No way.
Yeah, dude.
So I just found out I can commute on the bike path from my house to our new office. allegedly, it's not signed yet, but if everything goes well, and it's like 3 miles.
This will do 23 miles an hour?
23 miles an hour, and you can get a pro version that has full metal pedals. It's like a matte black with green accents. It comes with a rear spoiler that makes actual downforce.
I need that.
And it has
a how much downforce does it make at 23 miles an hour?
I don't know. There's numbers on our website.
62 grams.
But it's pretty crazy, dude. And there's like a Bluetooth speaker that comes with the Pro, and you mount it to like, okay, see where Jordan, can y'all see this picture?
Oh, let me put it back up there.
Yep. Okay, see Jordan's leg, that little like steering axle going up?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Bluetooth speaker that comes with the Pro that mounts to that. And you can either play music from it, or it makes like Taycan noises, like these.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sport noises.
Like goes with the acceleration. And then you can also adjust the amount of power it sends to each rear wheel, and that's what makes you drift.
Ah.
Yeah, it can do it all through the app.
Kyle's all in.
And it's only $2,000 for both, for that whole set. So it's like,
wow, what are we waiting for?
You get your Segway and your go-kart kit.
I'm going to go buy one right now. Actually,
I really like the Solo, but this goes on bike paths.
Yeah, we need to review this as soon as possible. All right, I'm going to email them tonight. That's the coolest freaking thing I've ever heard of. And you guys did this. Can you share where you did this test?
We were snooping on Rivian.
We were literally in front of Rivian.
We were in Rivian head HQ, their back parking lot. We saw the Rivian van and the trucks, and they were looking at us weird, and we were looking at them weird.
Yeah, and we're like, don't mind us. We're just testing out something completely different.
That's cool. Did you happen to see all the new chargers they put in there at the Irvine location?
I didn't. Are they in the front?
I think they're in the back. Someone got spy photos of their new DC chargers. It'll be their Adventure Network chargers they put in there for testing, I guess.
Oh, dude, I've not seen that. I did see. Sorry, you said DC fast, and I just have you heard of Volt?
Or Volta.
Volta, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw one of the DC fast ones the other day.
Yeah, but they're only 50 kilowatt, but they are free, which is nice.
Yeah, dude, they're freaking free, and they're at like all these Whole Foods now.
Yep, and they just put the ads on them.
Yeah, and that's what pays for electricity, right?
Well, I don't think they're profitable, but yeah, it's a good idea.
It's definitely great for EV owners, I'll tell you that much, that can utilize it.
Absolutely, 100%. Look, charging is our biggest problem to EVs. You know, the cars are there, the technology's there, the demand is there. It's all charging. That is purely it at this point.
So what do you think is more important, charging speed or access to charging stations?
Yes.
Yeah, both.
Both.
Unfortunately.
Well, I would say more so access to charging stations, but it depends. Like if you put in a 110 outlet and say you put an EV charger, and that's going to do no one good. You know, if you put in a level 2 at most businesses, makes no difference. We need really inner city 50 kilowatt minimum, I would say, especially in here in Colorado where everyone's going to drive a giant ass battery pack, Rivian, Hummer EV, etc. 50 kilowatts, still a 4-hour charge on these vehicles. And so, you know, that's a level 2 at this point in my head. And then really it should be 150 minimum for highway, but really 300 plus.
Yeah. So I already told you I'm taking that Ioniq 5 from California to Texas, correct?
Yeah. You go on I-10?
I'll have to look it up. But I did map out the charging stations, and it says there's EA charging stations all the way there. And like most of them are – The high 350 kilowatt?
350. Anything on a highway corridor pretty much is 350 kilowatts unless they couldn't get the charging power they need, which is actually coincidentally at their flagship location in Baker. There were only 50 kilowatt chargers. With the beautiful thing. They were all slow. There was one 150 kilowatt. I shouldn't slam them that hard.
Interesting.
Oh, that was something me and Kyle saw at the LA Auto Show. Maybe saw too. The EA charger with the overhang, the roof. With the solar panels.
Yeah.
Looks cool. I mean, it's funny because the solar panels only power the lights at the station, like doesn't actually power the station itself. But I feel like people are going to see that and assume, because people don't understand how little power solar draws compared to what a car takes in.
Yeah.
And so they're going to see these chargers with solar roofs, and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. It takes the sun and puts it in my car.
Well, it is cool. It's neat. As long
it doesn't have to power the whole car. I think it's nice to see.
Well, it should The charging station's cooler. It should keep the stress off the handles from environmental reasons. Should keep the screens working longer. And it should keep you drier if it's raining out. I'm all in.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get soaked as bad when you're having to restart your session for the fourth time.
Dude,
yeah.
Okay. I'm hoping I do not have to deal with like
50, it's actually 000. Not as bad as we all joke. It's kind
of
fun because
you like unplug and play around. It's like, it's kind of enjoyable. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a brand new car that's never been truly tested here in the U.S., charging on a network that's known to have issues. You probably will have some issues. It's probably not going to be perfect. But at the end of the day, are we like worried that you won't make it there? No, you may just plug in, have like a weird issue. What we find is in, you know, with Taycan, especially with high power DC charging, things tend to get a little bit more wonky, especially on Signet chargers. And at the end of the day, it just comes down to how sensitive is the charging hardware, how sensitive is the car, and it might require a couple session restarts, but I think you'll be fine either way.
Yeah. I think the worst experience I had with EA, I had an e-tron GT Sportback, and I was about an hour away from home, and I left a little early because I knew I had to charge. So I'm like 30 minutes ahead of schedule. Get to the charging station. One station doesn't work. And it's in the Walmart parking lot of like one of the sketchiest Walmarts I've been to in like, in like Thousand Oaks or something, which is not usually a sketchy area, but this Walmart was just real sketch. And so there's only four stations, right? I use one not working, use another one not working, use another one not working. And I'm like, dude, this last one's like my only hope. Use it. It'll start charging and then stop. So I'm like, dude, this is ridiculous. I had 3 miles of range left. So I call EA and I'm just talking to them. They're like, yeah, we'll get this worked out. And they did that thing where they're like, all right, we're going to manually start it. Go ahead and plug it in. They start it. It starts charging for about a minute. The moment I hang up, it stops.
Yeah, they're probably, I mean, it probably was just Signet units or ABB hardware. I mean, look, these things are so garbage, the units that are in there. And the software that runs them. And there's so many different patches on top of everything. And CCS is already really complicated that, you know, everyone's like, let's build more chargers. Fine. But if we just replicate the experience that we have today, that's not going to be good. It needs to get better. And then once we have it perfected, then replicate, I think.
Yeah, I just don't get why, as much as people hate on Tesla, their charging experience for the most part is pretty freaking effortless.
Amazing. The best. I just went to Salt Lake City and back through Wyoming. There's, I could not do this trip in any CCS car, not even a Lucid Air, because it's too long and I had 60 mile an hour headwinds. I took my Tesla, didn't even think about it, left not even fully charged, drove all the way to Salt Lake, stayed overnight in Park City, drove back, 2-day trip over the weekend, had zero issues. Couldn't do that. Literally could not do that with any other electric car other than a Tesla because there's no charging infrastructure along I-80.
So what is your opinion as to why people didn't just adapt their plug?
Because you'd have to tell your own customers to go use the big, bright, glowing red competitor's station.
Yeah, it's a pride thing.
And I also really don't know. Like, there were some small companies who said, we want our EVs to use the Tesla network, and then nothing really came of that either. So Aptera, was it Bollinger, I think?
Yeah, Bollinger, I think, back in the day. Yep, it's just...
There are a few. I don't actually... I do love Tesla, you know, owe a lot to them. But at the same time, I don't actually think they would follow through with that, or you would, as a serious party, ever be able to get in touch with someone to make that happen. I feel like that's one of those things where, sure, if somehow they knew, the right people knew, they would maybe try and make it happen. But I think you just get ghosted by them as another company. And, you know, they practically ghost their own customers half the time anyway.
Well, so. I think that's part of it. The other part is it's a vertically controlled network in a competitor automaker where the current company has no control over the network that they're using. It's also not the global standard. The new European US standard is CCS. So all the Euro automakers, that's what they're doing. By law, they have to use that. In the US, we use an adapted version. In China, they use GBT. In Japan, they use CHAdeMO. And so it's market-specific plug types. But even more than that, I think it's just there's a lot of issues with sending your BMW i4 customers to a supercharger and saying, good luck dealing with all those people. You know? I don't know. I think it's an image thing more than anything.
Yeah. It's like the whole USB-C versus Lightning thing.
Yeah, but at this point, we're too far gone. We'll never use the Tesla plug. I do agree 100%. It's the most elegant solution, but we're already too far into CCS at this point that that's the way we're going to go.
Yeah. It also doesn't have the same kind of power capability. I think CCS is supposed to be rated for like a good bit higher than where Tesla's
500
kilowatts connector. Right, yeah, 500. So it's currently twice.
Yeah.
Well, Tesla on some.
If they can cheat their own spec sheet a little as they have. I mean, those connectors were never rated for 250, and here they are doing 250. So.
Yeah, well, Tesla's going to keep to a 400 volt system for charging for version two and three. I heard allegedly, possibly, and I don't even remember who this is coming from, so I hope I'm not ratting anyone out, that it will be 800 volt charging moving forwards, and then either the chargers or the cars will adapt 400 to 800 volt like the GM stuff does, depending on what charger you're plugging into, which honestly, the Taycan should do, because it's more efficient than doing a booster. Just go parallel or series to parallel, you know, one way or the other.
I think it might be more a case of having it show up in a very transparent way to the charger you plug it into as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Taycan's got some issues with this booster as well, I think, honestly, because you plug into a ChargePoint CPE 250 and it triggers the 400 volt system. You only get 85, 90 kilowatts on 125 kilowatt branded unit because it won't go to 125 kilowatts at 800 volts.
That'll be an interesting test. I don't think there's a whole lot of stations where I'll be able to get it because I'm going to be using EA half the time anyways, but it'll be interesting. I want to try and find a station where I can use that 50. I think I have the 50 kilowatt, the standard onboard charger. Yeah, but that's such a horrible charging experience. I don't want to subject myself to
the hotel. You know the hotel next to Crabtree? It's fine. You just go up, swipe on the app, plug in, it always works.
Well, my point is that's a 50 kilowatt charger. So what I'd like to do is try and have it limited by that onboard conversion process, which that maybe a CPE 250 is the only thing I can think of.
You need a CPE 250 that doesn't trigger the booster or doesn't trigger the booster bypass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. I wonder how Ioniq 5 is going to handle a lot of that stuff. Forrest, you're going to have to do some nerdy testing for us.
Dude, I will do whatever you need me to.
Yeah, because you're going to get the car. So I get to go. I'm going to do the first drive thing in a week or 2 weeks from now, I guess. But you're going to be able to actually go out and do some testing. So I'll see if we can find some things for you to try out.
Sure, dude. If you want, just send me a list of stuff and I'll try to. I don't have any of my camera equipment because it all broke in an accident I got into, but I can record whatever kind of footage you want me to. I can
send it over to you. As long as you've got an iPhone or an Android, it's all we use.
Yeah, dude. I can even put the video together and send it to you and you can post it on your channel because something longer than like 5-10 minutes, I won't be able to post anywhere.
Cool. Well, let's come up with some ideas then. That'll be great.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Give me something to do on the road trip.
Yep, exactly. So Jordan, what do we have going on next week? Should we talk about the thing this weekend?
Yeah, we got the EV Media Summit coming up this weekend in Pasadena. So that's going to be a riot. I don't know. How would you describe it, Kyle?
Yeah, so we're going to have like 30 YouTubers all covering electric cars come to Pasadena to then hang out for a weekend of fun. We'll have cars and Archimotos and solo EVs and EQS and a whole bunch of stuff going around over there. It's going to be great. And then, then we're just going to drink a lot, hopefully. And have
is the solo as fun as it looked? Because I think that looked like a ton of fun you guys are having in those things. With the lifting as you accelerated, I've never seen a car do that.
That was weird.
Yeah, was it fun? Like, yeah, because it's like weird. But like, was it like fast and like fun? Like, woo, we're actually, it's not like that.
Okay, but like, would you pick that over, say, the smart car for like a fun, nimble city commuter? No, really.
It actually reminded me of my Fiat 500 that had the base engine, you know, ridiculously slow, but quirky. Okay. So it was entertaining. Like, it wasn't fun or engaging, but it was entertaining just to
do it. Yeah, it was definitely a good time.
It was terrifying.
The 30 minutes we drove it or whatever.
I hated that car. It's absolutely terrifying.
So is it a better rental than an owned vehicle? Like, if it was like a car to go, like car as a subscription or Zipcar, whatever.
If you weren't driving it on the highway, absolutely, because you just rag on it and not feel bad in the slightest. Every time I drove Jordan's car, I was afraid I was going to break it.
So Austin, what if you had to buy an electric car, what would you get?
That's really tough. I mean, with my history with Tesla, I really do enjoy the Performance Model 3, which I know that you and Ben do as well.
Hey, I know a guy who's getting rid of one of those.
Hey, me too. Hold on. Mine's
But no, I'm a huge fan of the Taycan. Ben, what you just got is stunning. I absolutely love it. Really like the Cross Turismo. I don't know. I've never had a Porsche. I'd love to have a Porsche. And kind of like what you were talking about, Ben, I would always challenge people with electric cars because as weird as it sounds, I would push for people to just consider electric when I worked there, not consider Tesla. And I would always challenge people to be like, range doesn't matter. Acceleration like doesn't really matter if you're looking for a daily vehicle. And the Porsche does a lot of stuff better than Tesla, just not the numbers that people talk about.
We'll have to try the range. I'm actually starting to suspect it might have the same highway range as my Model 3.
I mean, it very well could, but I think that would be my choice right now. I'm interested with some of the stuff that's coming, but currently available, I think that would be my choice is a Taycan Cross Turismo.
That'd be my choice too.
You do Cross Turismo or Sport available. Turismo?
Sport Turismo. Oh.
I'm not sure.
Austin does like the overlanding stuff, Kyle. He's he would take this off road.
Yeah, I have a buddy that lifted his Fiesta ST, and I've really considered doing the same to mine just because it's fun. I don't know, it's stupid. I don't know if you could say I like overlanding because I've never done it, but I like the idea of it. So,
well, it's pretty easy to go overlanding. Just go somewhere you haven't been before, and now you're overlanding. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, we kind of hit the 1 hour, 11 minute mark here. Sorry to everyone for rambling on. I'm trying to think if there's anything else important going on. We talked about the Volkswagen GLI. Forest we talked about the GMC. See you, Forrest.
Bye, guys. Yeah. I got my wife.
We talked about the GMC being great. So we got our media coverage in on the vehicles we were reviewing. Yep, that's all I got.
Yeah. It's a good show. I'm gonna go drive around then. I'm excited really to drive.
Quick question for Ben: is there anything you plan on? Sorry, my dog's going crazy. Is there anything you plan on doing to the Taycan now that you have it? Like, are you gonna tint the windows? Is there anything after you have it that you feel like you need to do now?
Probably some window tint and the specific wheels I got. I have visualized a way to wrap part of the design black to match the rest of the wheel and kind of change the look of that wheel entirely. So we're going to give that a shot.
Wide body.
Are you going to charge yourself in the first place?
Are you going to charge yourself?
So I don't have to wrap the inside edge of the wheelbarrow. Really dumb. Or if my idea fails and I don't have the worst looking design. I have the second.
So cool. I have to throw out there someone I didn't get any pictures from, but I met a Miata owner at a Miata meet out here in Southern California last week, and he just got a set of Model 3 Aero wheels, put them on his NC Miata, and it looks phenomenal, perfect fitment, like it is stunning. And so it kind of gave me a thought. I don't know, it's something I might pursue.
Hey, I have Aero wheels. If you need some Aero wheels,
I'm telling him this is the route he needs to go.
Yeah, why do Model 3 Aero wheels look so much better on everything than a Model 3?
That's so true.
Makes no sense. That's the thought to end the podcast, right? There.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
And on that bombshell. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging in with us. Check out our stuff on Twitter and YouTube and everywhere, honestly, Out of Spec. I'm on Twitter at Jordan_Schieffer. Got Ben at Benji_OOS. Kyle at It's Kyle Connor. Austin at Flywheel Films on Instagram, and Forrest at Forrest Auto Reviews on Instagram and TikTok. And until then, we'll see y'all in the next one.